Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Mike Panera, singer, guitarist, and songwriter, is known around the world as the driving force from legendary and iconic bands Iron Butterfly, Blues Image, Alice Cooper, and of course his solo work with Goodnight, My Love. Panera formed the Blues Image in Tampa, a progressive blues band playing rare blues songs by iconic British blues bands. He and Blues Image moved to Miami, where they were co-founders of the famous rock venue The Image in Miami Beach. Mike headlined and performed weekly with such legendary artists as The Grateful Dead, Eric Clapton and The Cream, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, The Doors, and others. 1 year later, they moved to Hollywood, California. Mike received a recording contract from Atlantic Records, where they had a huge hit with Ride Captain Ride, which Mike co-wrote and sang. Ride Captain went to number 3 on the Billboard charts, earning a Platinum Record Award. Mike played in the Iron Butterfly, who received the first Platinum Record Award ever given to any artist. Iron Butterfly albums, which feature Panera, are Metamorphosis, one of my favorite albums, with Panera and Rhino. Of course, Rhino Reinhardt, a local favorite here in the Sarasota area, which hit number 16. Evolution, Best of Iron Butterfly, Light and Heavy, and it got an Evita Laser video disc, all featuring Mike. The single Easy Rider, written by Panera, reached number 66 on the Billboard charts, making it the band's biggest hit aside from Inagata De Vita. The album is noted for having the first use of the guitar talk box, which Mike co-invented. During this time, Panera discovered and co-produced Black Oak Arkansas on Atlantic Records, resulting in a multi-million seller, now multi-platinum. He and iconic Jimi Hendrix drummer Mitch Mitchell formed the band Ramatam, recording the album Ramatam. The group was acclaimed as a cutting-edge progressive rock band. In the mid-70s, Panera joined Cactus. He and Ted Dugin went on a national tour together. They turned their nightly jamming at the end of the shows into a climatic finale entitled The Guitar Battle of the Century. It was an exciting blend of high-energy playing, wrestling, and audience participation. In 1980, Mike joined up with longtime pal Alice Cooper for 2 world tours. In 92, Mike formed the first original classic rock supergroup, the Classic Rock All-Stars. The band included lead singers and stars from Rare Earth, our buddy Peter Rivera, Sugarloaf, Spencer Davis, Headhunters, and himself. Special guests included members of Kansas, Toto, Allman Brothers, Steppenwolf, Moody Blues, and many others. They were the number one classic rock supergroup in the world. Please welcome legendary guitarist, singer, songwriter, producer, Mike Panera, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Ray. How are you doing?
Did I miss anything?
No. Oh, no. Just some of the new things that I'm doing, but I'll get to that with you later.
Okay. Well, let's do that now. What do you got going on?
Well, I just completed a new album called Timeless. And it's a combination of the most requested songs of my career, and includes Ride Captain and Inagata De Vita, and a lot of songs like that. And it also features a 40-piece orchestra.
Wow.
From Orlando.
Really?
Yeah. Man, you haven't, I tell you, you haven't lived until you've heard Ride Captain Ride with a 40-piece orchestra behind it. And Jonathan Cain from Journey, founder and leader, right? He played on it. Thank you, Jonathan. And also Pat Travers played on it. Had a lot of great iconic players on that album, and that's called Timeless.
Okay.
And that's, it's on Cleopatra Records. And, you know, they're calling it Blues Image and Mike Panera, and that's fine with me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's okay, because we've had a lot of requests to go out on tour and reunite the Blues Image material, because most of the guys are not playing anymore. But the other thing that I've done, Ray, that I find very interesting, and so do a lot of other people, is I've gotten into online video streaming for the folks that are quarantined right now.
Right.
And I get the, you know, the invites go out from the best guitar company in the world. They're called Sawtooth.
Uh-huh.
And they sponsor me, and they really do have the best gear. I've got a guitar right now that I'm playing that hasn't even been released to the public yet. It won't come out till this summer. And it's got like 7 pickups, and you can get any combination of tones, a Les Paul with a Stratocaster, with a Telecaster. I mean, just unbelievable. And they send the invites out and let people know that I'm going to be live online. So I did a show yesterday. It was the first one of its kind. It's called The Captain's Log.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I wear my captain's hat, you know, it's really, really cool. And so I play the Sawtooth stuff, and I tell road stories. So I really get a good feel for what people like of my career and the songs and whatnot. And so the chat replies are coming in as I'm talking, as I'm playing. And from as far away as Japan and Germany and, you know, Sweden. And so it's really fun to communicate with the fans and be able to talk to them one-on-one. And then I take requests. You know, somebody will say, hey, can you play such and such a song, which I didn't think anybody even knew, like from the early, early Blues Image,
right.
1966,
right.
67. But, and of course, they know a lot about my jams with Hendrix and John Bonham, God rest their souls, from Led Zeppelin. A lot of people that I jammed with, Greg Allman, that I was very close with, actually, is more than jamming. And so they want to know, what was that like, and tell us about this. So it's a combination of what I call road stories and also some requests, musical requests.
This is a great time for you to do that, too, because everybody's at home, they have nothing to do, you know, and they love music, you know, and it's a wonderful time for you to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I was... Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
So I did that yesterday for an hour and a half. It was only supposed to be 30 minutes.
Right.
But we got carried away, so it was an hour and a half that I was on there.
Now, are you going to do more of these soon, or...
I'm doing them every Tuesday at 3 p.m.
Okay.
On my Facebook page. I have an official fan page.
Right.
Aside from the timeline. And the official fan page has all the notices on there. And we'll be doing it every Tuesday at 3 p.m.
Awesome. Yeah. Gosh, what is wrong with you? Blackmore and Candace were on there the other night from their house, and they did a nice little concert from Blackmore's Night, you know, all the music from Blackmore's Night. So that was pretty cool too. I love it when you guys do things like that, you know, instead of, you know, just kind of stay home and sulk.
Absolutely. And next week I'm going to invite a bunch of people, players and artists and friends.
Oh, good.
To join me live,
yeah,
you know, with the new technology. You know, we can bring in people from other locations and have them all there, like on a Zoom situation. You know, it looks like the Hollywood Squares, but we've got our instruments and we're jamming together. So that's going to be real fun next week.
That would be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to that. Definitely.
Great.
Yeah. You know, I was good friends with Joe Lala.
What a great guy he was.
Yes, he
good
was.
Friend. We went to high school together.
I know. He talked all great things about you. He was my first interview. I hung out with him in his house. He wanted me to be his personal assistant, but I did get him somebody. to help him out with all his issues and stuff. But yeah, he's a great guy, man. He was a great guy. I really miss him.
Yeah, definitely. And he was a very integral person in the Blues Image, because when I formed the band in Tampa, there was two guys that went to high school with me.
Right.
And then Malcolm Jones, again, rest in peace, he had just gotten in from Wales. And so he was kind of ahead of the music scene while people in Tampa were playing, Does Your Chewing Gum Lose Its Flavor on the Bedpost Overnight?
Yeah.
And guys like me were jamming and backing up people like Bobby Blue Bland and R&B people, Cherry Butler and, Benny King. So there seemed to be, like, all the way to the left were the bubblegum guys, all the way to the right were the R&B guys. But Malcolm came in and said, you know, there's a new wave of music coming in from Europe, England especially, and what it is, it's blues. It's the original blues as played by the pioneers, like John Lee Hooker and Muddy Waters and people like that, but they've turned it into something a little different by turning up their Marshall amps to 10 and getting this incredible distortion and stuff. And sure enough, he turned us on to that scene, and that's when Eric Clapton was part of John Mayall and the Blues Breakers. Eric Burton had the Animals. They were doing some great stuff. The Yardbirds were doing great stuff. And so it was Malcolm who led us that way. But then Joe, he liked my idea of having two drummers. I said, let's do two drum sets, plus Joe, you play great Latin percussion. And so we did that. And man, I tell you, Ray, what a sound in the early Blues Image to hear two drummers playing like a Chicago shuffle.
Exactly.
In perfect sync.
Yeah.
You know, with the fills and everything. And Joe, when he would jump over his drums and come out and play Latin percussion on top of that, it gave us a sound like at that point nobody had.
Well,
we were the only ones to sound like that.
Well, Jimi Hendrix said Blues Image was one of the best up-and-coming bands around. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that was very nice of him.
Yeah.
That was a magazine article. And he also, besides that, he had done other articles and stuff where he talked about how he loved coming in from the road and coming directly over to our club in Hollywood, California, to play with us. And very nice man. You know, he would invite us over to his house after we jammed together, and he ended up giving me a guitar. He gave me his Dobro, the one that he played on All Along the Watchtower.
Mm-hmm.
It's got all those slide sounds and stuff. He gave that to me.
Wow.
He's just a great guy.
How incredible is that?
Well, Totally.
Here's something from my...
I missed them all.
I know. Here's something from my interview with Joe that he said about you, okay? I'm going to read. We opened for acts like The Doors and Janis Joplin, you know, all those big mothers. When we opened for Cream and Eric Clapton and the Yardbirds with Jimmy Page, they'd go to the promoter and say, "How dare you book someone that good before us?" Referring to lead guitarist Mike Panera of Blues Image. Panera was intimidating to other guitar players. Clapton told the promoter and came that close to saying he wouldn't go on after Panera. And you were that good, man.
Well, you know, we had similar styles, Clapton and I, with the blues thing, as well as with Carlos Santana. I had not really ever heard him play. And then someone said, you know, there's a group in San Francisco that sounds just like you guys. And in fact, Mike, your guitar playing is very much like his. Check them out. They're called Santana. And yeah, we checked them out. We toured together. We did pop festivals together. Had a lot of fun. You know, Santana and Blues Image were a major order musical bill that we had a lot of fun with. But I tell you, when I formed a Ramitam with Mitch Mitchell, Jimi Hendrix's drummer, we discovered a girl guitar player.
Yep.
Named April Lawton.
Right.
And God rest her soul. Not many people left that I played with, but I tell you, she was phenomenal. She was a cross between Jimmy and also like John McLaughlin, you know, heavy jazz and blues and fusion and stuff. And so Ramitam went out, and we were playing with groups like Led Zeppelin, 10 Years After, Journey was just forming back then, Bob Seger, a lot of great bands. And it's amazing because it's like the whole thing had come around in a full circle. Because when we got out of Tampa, we moved to Miami.
Right.
And people said to us in Miami, hey, man, why don't you just start your own club? Why play these little these little bars and stuff? Because you guys are probably the best band in Miami. So why don't you see if you can find a place of your own? And oddly enough, there was a bowling alley that came up for rent on Collins Avenue in Miami Beach. And we had some hippie friends who were contractors and, you know, they really knew their stuff. So they came in and tore the bowling alley down. All the lanes were gone. And we were there with just, you know, concrete floor, concrete wall, roof. And then some other friends came in with sound and lights. And before you knew it, we had a theater. It was more than a club. It was really a theater that fit like 1,500 people.
Wow.
And we called it The Image, you know, after the blues image. It's called The Image, T-H-E-E. And opening night was Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention.
Wow.
And then Eric Clapton and the Cream came, and the Yardbirds with Jimmy Page. And that was a kind of funny story because the people that were coordinating all the travel and stuff, they said, hey, man, we need somebody to go pick up the Yardbirds at Miami International. Would you do it? I said, sure. So I went over and picked them up, and Jimmy came in, sat in my car, and he had a young kid with him. Looked like he was like, I don't know, 14 years old is what he looked like. And he kind of looked like he'd run away from home to go on the road with the Yardbirds. But anyway, Paige tells me, he says, I want to introduce you to my friend. His name is Steven Tyler.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and so I met Steven then. I said, hey, man, how you doing? He said, oh, I'm a blues man, man. I sing and play the blues, and I play blues harp. I said, yeah, sure you do. And, man, I was shocked when I heard him play. He is, you know, he was great.
Yeah.
So we went on the road. The Yardbirds and Blues Image did a bunch of gigs together. And then a couple of years went by. 3 years, I guess it was. I saw Jimmy again, but now he was in a band called Led Zeppelin.
Yep.
And I said, God, remember Jimmy, we played together back in Miami when you were in the Yardbirds. And I said, I'm just getting ready to join the Iron Butterfly, I tell you the truth. And, you know, he understood, you know, what was going on. Because at that time, Ray, you know, a lot of bands were at the mercy of their record labels.
Exactly.
You know, you come home from playing like, I don't know, a couple hundred dates that year. And the guys that were married wanted to be with their family. They said, ah, finally home. But the record label would say, nope, you got to go back into the recording studio, record another album, and then we're sending you back out on the road. So Blues Image didn't fare very well with that, and the band started unraveling at the seams.
Yeah.
And right at that same time is when Iron Butterfly called me and said, we'd like you to be our new guitar player. You and another Floridian by the name of El Rhino, Larry Reinhardt.
Yes.
And I said, great. That's just in time. So it turned out real well because my parents were very poor and they were on the verge of losing their house and everything. And I came from a band that was making $200 a week to a band that was making $20,000 a month.
Yeah.
You know, so I was able to pay my parents' house off, and it all went very well. A lot of fans don't understand it to this day. You know, they say, you know, Panera left Blues Image and right after Ridecast and Ride, they could have been so big.
Right.
But they don't understand what goes on behind the lines and why a lot of bands from the classic rock period broke up.
Exactly.
All over the place.
Yeah. Exactly. Especially from the 60s, because a lot of them never made that crossover into the 70s. You know?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, Ray.
Yeah.
That's right. And a lot of bands, if John Fogerty had stayed with Creedence Clearwater and if Three Dog Night had, you know, stayed with the original singers and stuff, we'd have some incredible bands out there. But, man, it's really rough when you know, you got a number one record and you're selling out stadiums like 40,000 people with other bands and, you know, you go to get paid. And your manager hands you a check for $200.
I know.
For the week, and you go, wait a minute, what's this? They go, well, don't you know how this business works?
That's
you have to pay back all your expenses.
Exactly.
From the record label.
Exactly.
I said, what expenses? They loaned us, you know, a few thousand dollars to make the record. That's the only expenses I know of. They said, oh, no, they do promotion. They buy ads and magazines and ads on radio stations. And I said, oh, I see. So they said, you got to pay all that back before you actually start making money.
Yeah.
Very few bands I know ever got to that point that they paid the record labels back.
Very sad. There's a YouTube video on that where somebody broke it down and how much you actually make at the end, and it's horrible.
Yeah. It's a good thing we love what we're doing because it never affected our performances. Most musicians I know from that period will go on stage regardless of what was happening in the business world.
Yeah.
And just play with everything they had.
Exactly. Well, Joe told me Frank Zappa was the one who talked you guys into going to California, right?
He was one. Yeah. Frank was one. Eric Burden was the other.
Yep.
And Eric actually was more of an influence. When we played with Zappa on opening night, he came backstage and said to me, he says, I'm changing your name. You're no longer Mike Panera. I said, oh, really? What am I? He says, your name from this point on is Mr. Ferocious because of the way you play guitar.
That's funny.
I loved Frank Zappa, and I love the Mothers. I thought they were way ahead of their time. And for him to say that about us was really cool.
Yeah.
And he said, what you guys should do is pack it up and go out to L.A. because you're never going to make it really big here. You're doing well, but you got to go to L.A. to get signed. I said, okay. And he said, call me when you get there. And we couldn't reach him when we got there, though. He was very busy and hard to find him. But Eric Burden, we were able to reach.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric said, yeah, I remember you guys. Come on down. I'm going to get you a gig at the Whiskey A Go-Go, and you'll get discovered there. No doubt about it. You guys are so good. So Eric had his manager get us a gig at the Whiskey A Go-Go, and we played our signature blues, fusion, Latin, rock sound, and tore the place up, and we got signed shortly thereafter at Atlantic Records.
Exactly. Was that Kevin Deveridge? Was he the Animals manager at the time? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was their manager.
Right.
And in fact, he was a bit of a thorn in our side because when we got there, he said, yeah, I'm expecting you. Eric told me you guys were coming by. Let's make this quick, okay? I don't have a lot of time. He's British, and it was okay. We said, sure, here's our single. And so we put a 45 on the record player there, and it was called Can't You Believe in Forever. And it was a song that I had written back in Miami, and we recorded it in Miami too. It was like our first recording was Can't You Believe in Forever, with the B-side being Parchment Farm, a blues shuffle by Mose Allison. And so we played him Can't You Believe in Forever, and I don't think he even got to the end of the song. He said, I've heard enough. No, thank you. Thank you, but no thank you. I said, well, can't we talk about this a little? I mean, Eric was sure that you'd like us and that we would get a deal. And he said, yeah, well, I'm not Eric. And, there's the door. Nice meeting you.
Wow.
And man, as fate would have it, just as we were getting ready to go out that door, Eric comes walking in.
Uh-huh.
He said, yeah, I heard you guys were here. I wanted to come by and say hello. And I said, great. He said, how's it going? We're going to book you guys, get you into the Whiskey A Go-Go. I said, you better talk to your manager about that. He doesn't seem to like us very much.
Jeez.
So all I know is those were the days when the British musicians, they told their managers what to do. It wasn't their managers telling the artists what to do.
Exactly.
People like Eric, especially Eric Burden, my God, he was so original, and his songs just, exuded, rebel and it's my life and I do what I want. I mean, man, I said, God, this is the guy. And so sure enough, we went to the Whiskey A Go-Go and played there, and Lee Dorman, God rest his soul, of Iron Butterfly, the bass player, was in the audience, and he came up to us afterwards. He says, listen, I'm going to invite my managers to come see you. We're the biggest group on Atlantic Records right now, so we have a lot of weight. We carry a lot of weight. And we'll get you signed. I said, okay, great. So sure enough, next time we played there, the managers were there, and they took us to see Atlantic Records, and we got signed.
Awesome. Incredible. Yeah. Great story.
Musicians helping musicians.
Exactly. You know? That's the way it should be. I gotta ask you about your big hit, of course. The Fried Captain Ride, 1970. There's two, explanations for the song. One, which is probably a rumor about the Pueblo In North Korean waters that got busted, and the song was about, you had the 73 men on the Pueblo, and then, of course, the other was about the staring at the keyboard for, I guess, Frank's Fender Rhodes. Which is right.
Well, they're both right.
They're both right.
What happened was we were in the studio, American Recording Studio, with Richard Pobler,
right,
who at that time was very popular as a producer. He was doing Three Dog Night. He was doing Steppenwolf. And, Born to Be Wild, Magic Carpet Ride, One is the Loneliest Number. I mean, everything he was doing was going hit. And so our manager managed to talk him into taking us in, and he heard us play. He said, "I don't know what to do with you guys. You're basically a blues band, and blues ain't user-friendly on radio." And, we just listened and said, "Yeah, but, we really play well, and we have long sound. We could scale it down a little bit so it sounds a little more user-friendly." He says, "Okay, let's see what you can do." And we started recording, and everything was coming out like blues and jazz fusion and Latin rock. And he said, "Man, I don't hear a hit here, and I don't think Atlantic's going to hear a hit. And unless we get something today that sounds like a hit, that I can call them and say, 'Yep, they got one, we're recording it now,' I think you guys are going to probably be dropped by the label."
Jeez.
And, Steppenwolf was down the hall waiting for the studio to free up because they were next to come in.
Right.
And got to meet them, and we became friends. But what happened with Ride was I didn't have anything ready to go, neither did anybody in the band. And I said, "What are we going to do? We have to have something to record, like now, something written now." And Skip said, "Okay, well, listen, I do have this idea, okay?" It goes, "Ride, Captain, ride upon your mystery ship." He says, "That's it." I said, "Well, okay, I like the melody. I like the, the words. Let's get this thing done." So I was into meditation, and I studied meditation and fasting and all this stuff. So I was pretty high, naturally. And I went into the utility closet, shut the door, and I just sat there, and I just started writing. And when I got out of there 10 minutes later, I had most of the song written, melody-wise and lyrically. Definitely Skip had the chords.
Right, right.
And so we had something. We definitely had something. So I went out to play for the producer, and I realized I didn't have a first verse. I didn't have an opening line. We had the rest of it, be amazed at the friends you have here on your trip and all that, but no first verse. So I sat down at Skip's piano, and you're right. It was a model number 73. And the reason it was 73 is because it had 73 keys.
Right.
So Fender Rhodes, that was their premier piano, the Rhodes Model 73. And it was big, chrome, it was like large letters right there where the keys were. And I sat there and I said, "I can't think of any." And then I see 73 and I went, 73. 73. I like the phonetics. I like the rhythm of those words. Very Tampa. Hey, 73, man. 73. It just reminded me of Tampa a little bit. So I wrote down the word 73. And then it just started going from there. 73 men sailed up from the San Francisco Bay and rode off the ship. And here's what they had to say. Okay. It went to the record label later that day. It was played for the record label, and they said, "This is it. This is going to be a hit. This is what we've been waiting for." So thank God we didn't lose our recording contract. And I don't know, probably 2 months later, it was released and zoomed up to number 3 in the nation. It was number 1 in a lot of regional markets, big markets. But overall on Billboard, it was number 3. And so we were just so jazzed about everywhere we went. You'd hear it on the radio, just everywhere. People calling me from Tampa, "Man, I heard you guys on the radio." It was really great. But here's the weird thing that happened, Ray. My manager gets a call from the Pentagon.
Oh, my God.
And they said, from the Pentagon. And they said, "We want to know how the guy that wrote the lyrics to this, Mike Panera, how he knew about the USS Pueblo spy ship that sailed out of San Francisco with approximately 73 men on it, And they definitely sailed off to history because they were captured by the Koreans and taken back to Korea. And in fact, the men are still there. They're being held hostage. And we want to know how Panera knew about it. And I got on the phone. I said, man, I had no idea about that. This is the first thing I hear about the USS Pueblo. I never even heard about that ship. And they said, oh, yeah, so the whole thing's a coincidence, right? The number of men, the place that it sailed out of, and the fact that it sailed on the history. That's all coincidence. I said, man, you can call it whatever you want. But I guess I picked up some vibes somewhere.
Yeah.
And so that was it. The word went out that in some way our song was connected with the USS Pueblo. And I tell you, Ray, the funny thing about that was, as time went by and I was on the road, people from the Pueblo that were on the Pueblo, the crew, would come up at our concerts and say, hey, man, I was on the Pueblo. I was one of the crew guys. Thanks for writing that song for us, man. I said, sure, brother. I said, but I wrote it for everybody.
That's great.
Not just you guys. Well, it was like that for years to come. But the high point was, this guy shows up at one of my gigs and says, I want to tell you something. I'm probably the only guy, the only person who knows why your third verse says, no one heard them calling. No one came at all.
Right.
Because they were too busy watching those old raindrops fall.
Right.
I said, really? You know what that means? Well, tell me, because I never figured it out. I'd like to know what I was saying. And he said, well, here's the thing. I was the radio control operator for the Pueblo. I was the guy who did all the control radio transmissions. And when the Koreans started heading for us to capture us, he said, I started going Mayday, Mayday, and sending out emergency radio transmissions. But there was a huge storm blowing. Out at sea. And so the radio transmissions wouldn't go through. You know, the storm was holding everything down, so nobody heard us calling for help. No one came at all. I said, oh, I get it, because they were too busy watching those raindrops.
Wow.
Oh, okay, now I know. Thank you. And
that's
was
incredible.
The peak to an otherwise odd story.
You must have had some kind of psychic connection or something there, man.
Well, you know, sometimes meditation and fasting, you know, can produce some awesome results sometimes. But, I kind of think, 73 men. I think the real total was like 77 or something.
Right.
But it was the San Francisco Bay, and it, it certainly did go off to history. And the boat is still there in Korea at their Naval Museum, the USS Pueblo. What I didn't like was they captured the crew and kept them there for 1 year under very strenuous circumstances.
Yeah.
And a lot of those guys now, you know, in their 70s and 80s, and they have these reunions, and I see it all the time, you know, the crew of the Pueblo. And I was thinking, you know, maybe one day I'll resurrect a tour.
That would be great.
And we'll go out and we'll say this is a tour as a tribute to the members of the USS Pueblo. And maybe we can stir up enough trouble to get the powers that be in Washington to say, hey, we gotta get that boat back, and we gotta pay tribute to the crew members and that were there for 1 year with limited water and food and stuff. That some of them died. God rest their souls. But yeah, that's the thing. That was a story with Rag Captain, and you know, to this day, Ray, it's still one of the most played songs on radio.
It is.
With satellite radio and all that stuff. And in the movies, it's been in Anchorman and Mick Jagger and Martin Scorsese's weekly series of vinyl. It was featured there. And I was really happy that it was featured in a good way. Mm-hmm. You know, the message in the story was real nice. Especially in Anchorman, where the other radio station guys are threatening to kill him. His girlfriend has left him. His dog was captured by some motorcycle guy and thrown over the Golden Gate Bridge into the water. And, you know, it's pretty sad up to there. And then all of a sudden, the soundtrack starts playing Ride, Captain, Ride. Played the whole song. And the dog comes running back all wet. The girlfriend comes running back. I'm sorry. I love you. And the guy guy who was going to kill him said, I'm sorry, can you ever forgive me? I had actual thoughts of murdering you. It's a real high point to see Ride Captain Ride being played as the plot resolves.
Well, you know, one of my favorite videos is that video with John Byner introducing you guys. I mean, I can watch that video over and over again because, of course, Joe's in there and you're singing the song, and it just fits so well. It's so great. You know, you guys on the rocks with the water in the background. I love it.
Well, thank you. I had left the band. I was already out of the band for a couple of weeks. I was already in the Iron Butterfly.
Uh-huh.
And so the guy that you see on that rock who's lip syncing to my voice, you know, it's my voice that you're hearing.
Right.
But it's him mouthing it with his lips. Danny Coryell.
Oh, I didn't know that. I had no idea. Huh.
Yep. Rest in peace.
Wow.
Danny Coryell was the guy up on that rock singing. And a lot of people, you know, come up and go, God, you look different.
Yeah, yeah.
Back then, I said, well, no, that wasn't me, but it was me singing.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just had the Rose Bowl parade out here.
Uh-huh.
And they had a float. Trader Joe's created a float called the Ride Captain Ride Float. And they played it through their big PA on the float as they went up and down with the other floats up and down the streets of Pasadena. And so we were featured in the Rose Bowl parade. I heard later that it was aired live in 140 countries.
Hmm.
And they heard Ride Captain Ride live with my voice, and so now I do all my shopping at Trader Joe's.
That's loyalty, man.
yeah, and I play sawtooth guitars, man. Let me tell you, one day I'll just, you know, maybe next Tuesday when I go to do the show at 3, I'll call you to give you a reminder,
okay,
or email you,
all right,
and you'll hear these guitars with tones.
Yep.
And the first guitar that they have given to me is a hybrid. There's no other guitar like this in the world. It hasn't been released to the public yet. And I think you'll like it. It's got a great sound. And when you see seven pickups on there, makes you think, wow,
that's incredible.
What is this guitar capable of doing?
Yeah, I play a little guitar, so I know a little bit about guitar. I've always been a Fender guy.
Oh.
I had a 73 Tele, and I ended up selling it.
Oh.
Yeah, you should have saw the autographs I had on that, man. Alvin Lee, Eric Burden, oh man.
Wow.
All the guys from Humble Pie. But you know what? I wrote my first book, and I needed the money, so I said, it's either a book or a guitar, and I sold the guitar.
yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Good.
I miss it,
well,
though.
I'll have to invite you to jam with me live online, too.
Oh,
you know, the new technologies that are out there for bringing in different players from different locations and all playing in real time at the same time.
I'd be embarrassed to play with you, man.
Oh, play some good old blues, man.
Oh, yeah. I love blues.
On, you know,
I love blues. That's one thing I can do is I can play a little blues. Yeah.
Great.
You know, I heard Blues Image and Iron Butterfly were both supposed to play at Woodstock, right?
No, just Butterfly.
Oh, just Butterfly. I thought Blues Image was invited, too.
Yeah. We had done a lot of shows together.
Right.
Iron Butterfly and Blues Image were playing shows around the country at that time.
Right.
Big pop festivals, and I got to play twice, you know, go on with Blues Image and then go on with Iron Butterfly. And, you know, we did the Miami Pop Festival, but we did one in San Francisco, the San Francisco Music Festival, and that had Led Zeppelin, Eric Burden, Chambers Brothers, Blues Image,
yeah.
Iron Butterfly.
All the greats.
10 years after, Jefferson Airplane, Santana, must have been 20 artists. You should have seen the dressing room on that show, bro. everybody trying to find a seat.
Oh,
but yeah, it was great. It was great playing in both bands. But eventually, I slid out and you know, just went with the Butterfly, and they replaced me with two excellent musicians, Danny Coryell, singer,
right.
And Kent Henry, guitar player, both of whom have passed away. But they were so good, and Blues Image sounded real good. But again, my prediction of the record labels and the manager saying, hey man, you guys, you can't spend any time with your family. You have to get right back to the studio,
right.
And right back on the road. Seeing as that I was the main songwriter, it became extra hard for them. So a lot of tension, and then Blues Image broke up.
I'm actually in the Sarasota area. You know, I'm about 45 right. minutes from Tampa, but I worked at Tampa area for a long, long time doing as a music journalist. I covered, you know, Ruth Eckert Hall and all the big concert venues around here. But you know, locally, you know, of course, we had Larry Rhino Reinhart. He was from Bradenton, a Bradenton native, yes. And he was a big hero here. So was Dan Toler, another big. You know, guy.
Sure, here. Marshall Tucker Band.
Tucker Band, and of course Dickie Betts lives here, and and also Rick Derringer. He lives really close to me here, so yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, a lot of cool musicians, you know, from Florida. You know.
Oh God, for sure. And you know, speaking of Dickie Betts, when Blues Image were playing at Dino's nightclub in Tampa when we first got together. And we were doing, the blues format with the two drummers and all that. These guys walked in, three guys, and said, "Hey, we're the Almond Joy, man. We're from Bradenton."
Right.
I said, "Oh, that's a cool band. That's a cool name, man, the Almond Joy." So it was Dickie Betts, Greg Almond, and Dwayne Almond.
Mm-hmm.
God rest their souls.
Yeah.
And they came in, and after the thing was over, after our set was over, they came up and said, "What was that shuffle you opened up with, man? Bam, bam, da, da, down." I said, "Oh, that's Don't Want You No More by Spencer Davis." So that sounded huge with the two drummers. I said, yeah, it's a great song. And so then we had another one that I had written that was very Latin pop that went, dun, 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 dun. You'll hear that on our Blues Image album. And so I see that the Almond Joy had turned into the Almond Brothers, and their first album contained a song called Don't Want You No More by Spencer Davis. And, they did a great job of recording that song. But that was another example of Bradenton and Tampa and
yep.
Sarasota players all together. And a very funny thing involving Sarasota happened, and not too many people know this. I formed a band called the Classic Rock All-Stars.
Oh, of course.
And that had Pete Rivera, the yep. drummer and singer of Rare Earth.
Love Pete.
Jerry Corbetta,
yep.
keyboard player, founder, singer of Sugarloaf.
Yep.
And, a bunch of guys. And so I formed the band, and so I said, "Okay, guys, I'm so glad that you're up for this idea. We'll go up on stage and back each other up on our hits and our best-known songs." And then Pete said, "Well, when's the first gig?" I said, "Well, gee, Pete, I haven't booked anything yet. I figured we want to rehearse at least one time before I accepted a gig from an agent." And he said, "No, man." He said, "I don't rehearse unless there's a gig." that Detroit style of beat.
Yeah.
"I'm sorry, man. I don't play any gigs. I do any rehearsal unless there's some gigs." So I said, "Okay, hang on." I called the Temptations manager, and I said, "Listen, we're the Blues Image, and I'm forming this band called the Classic Rock All-Stars. One of the guys doesn't want to play a rehearse unless there's a gig. Now, I love the Sarasota Fairgrounds, and I love the fact that some friends of ours have a charity there for muscular dystrophy, and we'd like to help with that. So why don't we do something called the Winter Festival, it was wintertime, and starring the Temptations, they'll bring the people in, and then they'll get to hear the Classic Rock All-Stars also. And I can go ahead and book some rehearsals." So we got that together. So our very first show, Ray, was there at the Sarasota Fairgrounds.
Yep.
And we did the Temptations did their set.
Wow.
And we came on and did Classic Rock All-Stars. And people heard all those hits, and they were freaked out. In the audience was Dickie Betts,
mm-hmm.
Patrick Mraz, who's been on your show from Moody Blues.
He
was out there.
Yep.
Mickey Dolenz was out in the audience.
Huh.
And also Bon Scott of AC/DC.
Yeah.
They just all happened to be in the area, and they heard it over the radio and said, "Let's go see these guys."
Wow.
So we had so many stars there. I mean, the cast finale picture looks like a who's who of classic rock. And that was our first show that we ever did. And I asked Spencer to stay on, and I asked Mickey Dolenz to stay on. So the very first version of the Classic Rock All-Stars, most people don't know, has Spencer Davis, Mickey Dolenz,
yep.
Cherry Corbetta, Pete Rivera, Dennis Noto, Cannibal and Headhunters, and yours truly.
Yeah.
That was our first gig.
Yeah, that's gig is only 10 minutes from me here. Yeah, what year was that? Do you know?
That was 1992.
Okay, I wasn't here yet. I was still in D.C. Yeah, that's why we moved here about 17 years ago. But, yeah, I'm sorry I missed that, man. I would have definitely been there.
Well, I tell you, you got a piece. Some of the things we've been discussing here are being discussed for the first time.
Exactly.
So you're getting some scoops.
And then the original All Stars, you guys probably broke up that band because two guys passed away, Dennis and Jerry, you know, left us.
Yeah.
And then, you did reform some other guys. Are you still doing that? Are you still on the road with the new guys?
Nope. Same kind of thing happened there.
Right.
I called my friend Goldie McJohn,
right,
the founder of Steppenwolf,
right,
and the keyboardist. So he came in, and he has since passed away.
Right.
The bass player was Prescott Niles of the Knack.
Okay.
And he was real good.
Yep.
And the drummer was Albert Bouchard, the drummer and founder of Blue Oyster Cult.
Wow.
So that was the Classic Rock All-Stars version 2. We went out and did a bunch of gigs, but it never quite caught on, probably because I was singing all the songs.
Okay.
Those guys were in those bands,
right,
but they were not the lead singers. So, you know, we're doing Don't Fear the Reaper, and we're doing My Sharona and all that. I'm singing them one after the other.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't like going to see the first version where Pete would sing Rare Earth and Jerry would sing Sugarloaf, you know, the original singers.
Those all-star bands are so popular now. I mean, you got Happy Together Tour, you know, with Flo and Eddie. You got Ringo and his all-stars. I mean, they're all huge, you know?
It's true.
Yeah.
That's very true. And, well, we've got a lot of guys that, you know, call me all the time, well-known names that want to do a version of Classic Rock All-Stars with us.
You should.
And so we might, we might have something to surprise everybody with this summer.
Hell, you know everybody.
Yeah.
Even Alice Cooper did the thing with Johnny Depp, you know?
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
And I put an interview of Alice that was just released a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah. And so I put it on my Facebook timeline, and the guy is, the interviewer says to Alice, "Well, you just played this evening with your band, the Special Forces, and you had 40,000 people at Joe Louis Arena. How does that all feel?" And Alice says, "Oh, it's great, you know, it's great. We love to play." And then out of nowhere, the guy says, and he's a very well-known interviewer, he says, "Let me ask you something. It's been told that out of all the people that have played in your bands, there's only one guy that you're scared of, and that's Mike Panera. Is that true, Alice?" He says, Oh, yeah, I'm scared to death of him, man." And, you know, tongue-in-cheek. And so he says, "And why is that?" He says, "Well, Mike is like the Mr. Rogers of rock and roll. He'll come up to you and go, 'Hello, I'm Mike. How you doing, Alice? How are you feeling tonight?' 'Oh, good. We're going to have a great show.'" He says, "And I always have a feeling," he's smiling so much all the time, "that he's got some butcher knives behind his back, you know, that he's going to pull out any minute and start chopping at me."
That's funny.
Of course, he had a good laugh on that.
Yeah.
And he said, "No, I've known Mike since the late 60s. You know, we've been friends a long time. It's good to have him." He says, "You know, he plays the guitar with his teeth. Did you know that?" The guy said, "Oh, yeah, I heard that he does do that." And so it's a very healthy interview.
Yeah.
It's 2 hours long, so if you don't want to hear the whole 2 hours, when he starts talking about me, it's like 5 minutes in. And he says, "Yeah, I like beating Mike up on stage. You know, it's a wonderful feeling." He definitely is the Mr. Rogers of rock and roll.
That's funny.
I've been called a lot of things, Ray. I've never been called that before.
Jeez. Yeah, I try to get Alice on the show many times. I just can't reach him for some reason. I've had most of his band on the show, you know, but not Alice. I'll still keep trying.
Yeah, keep trying. try and try his manager, Shep.
Yep.
If you haven't already, and maybe Shep can, you know, move it along a little bit for you.
Well, you know, I figure now's a good time to get a hold of these guys because, you know, they got plenty of time to talk, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they're wanting to, you know. I mean, there's a lot of guys online right now.
Exactly.
Doing John Mayer. I just watched him do something, and Keith Urban watched him do something.
Yep.
And they got great mixes. You know, they're into their recording consoles, and the console goes into the camera, and it just sounds great, looks great. So hopefully, people will be treated to a lot of great free concerts online.
Exactly.
Just got to look for them.
Exactly. You know, Ramatam was a great band. It's a shame that it didn't last long, because, you know, one song I like was Whiskey Place, and there's a lot of comments that you sounded like Tom Jones.
You know, I hear that sometimes. People say, you sound a lot like Tom Jones. Our other song is Butterfly Blue by Iron Butterfly Metamorphosis.
Right. That's a good thing.
I wish it would have lasted longer.
Yeah.
Problem was is that April... she wasn't in the best of health.
Right.
Poor thing. She was very fragile. And the record label pulling the old thing of putting us out there for, you know, 6 nights in a row with one night off, and we're playing with 10 Years After and Emerson, Lake and Palmer and a lot of great bands. And, you know, she just started to where she was going to the hospital a lot from the road.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't continue. But Mitch and I had a great time because we had gotten a house in Long Island, New York, Huntington Bay, up on a hill looking down at the cut, you know, with all the sailboats coming in.
Yep.
And it was like 10 bedrooms, and it had a ballroom in it. And the record label donated it for us. They rented it for us. And so Mitch and I would get up, and we'd go in that ballroom, man, with all those acoustics, and play guitar and drum stuff. That should have been the album. But, you know, instead there was those other songs. But, yeah, Whiskey Place, the guitar harmonies, and a lot of the things that April and I were doing were very innovative
for
that time period.
I agree.
And people can definitely still get that album on Amazon or download, wherever you get downloads from, and that's Ramatam. And Mitch Mitchell, man, what a legend. I mean, you know, the drummer from Jimi Hendrix, holy mackerel.
Exactly.
I was off. We had a lot of fun because we'd go places like in Miami, you know, we'd show up at a big nightclub or something to jam with whoever was playing. And the next day I'd read an article in the Miami Herald that says, well, Mike Panera showed up to jam with Wayne Cochran and the CC Riders last night. He had some guy with him who he thought was Mitch Mitchell.
Uh-huh.
This guy was telling everybody he was Mitch Mitchell. And I said, I just thought, what do you mean it was Mitch Mitchell? What are you talking about, dude? I just left it alone, you know?
And of course, you guys had a pretty good producer there with Tom Dow also.
Tom Dow, legendary.
That's incredible.
Absolutely.
Another song I like was Can't Sit Still. That was another good tune.
Can't Sit Still was another great tune.
Another great tune. Great band.
Thank you so much, Ray.
Great band, man. I got two more questions for you. One is, why don't you think that you reached the heights of, like, Clapton, Page, Beck, Santana, and you got that PR like those guys did? Because you certainly were either just as good or better than those guitarists.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. The British have always had a flair for publicity, for media, and everything. I mean, look at Pink Floyd, you know.
They
disappear for a while, they come back, and they're playing for 50,000 people in arenas with flying pigs, balloons and stuff. They just, you know, they really have a flair for publicity and PR, and Deep Purple, a lot of the bands that have reunited, the managers make sure that there's a big publicity push on it. I would have to say the easy answer is that's just the way it was. It was meant to be. It wasn't a statement about who could play better than who and all that. It was just, you know, if you did enough big gigs and you had a good publicity agent, you could really move forward. I'll give you an example here in L.A. In 1970, Blues Image played with The Who.
Right.
at Anaheim Stadium.
Yep.
And I think that was, you know, maybe 30,000 people or something. And nobody knew about it. Nobody heard about it. It was just on the poster. It said The Who at Anaheim Stadium with opening guests. Blues Image. Or when Led Zeppelin was the opening band for Iron Butterfly.
Yeah.
We went on tour.
Yeah.
And, God, what a trip. I saw Jimmy, you know, and Jimmy says, "Hey, what says that we're opening for you guys?" I said, "I don't know anything about that." "I wish we should definitely be opening for you." And he says, "Oh, well, it's okay. We'll both do well."
Yeah.
And I think, you know, with the right publicity that would have went out,
yep,
saying Led Zeppelin opening for Iron Butterfly, there's a lot that could be done in getting the word out that I was playing with these bands. Same thing with the Guitar Talk Box,
yeah,
that you mentioned.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, we were in the studio cutting Metamorphosis, Iron Butterfly, and the original inventor came up to me and said, "Try this, see what you think." I said, "It looks like a water bag, you know, with a tube."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Yeah, but just put it on and I'll plug it into your amp and watch what happens." He put it there, and all of a sudden, my speakers were disconnected and the sound was coming up the tube into my mouth. And he says, "Just talk. Just, you know, shape your lips like you're talking." And I went, "Hello, baby," while I played the notes, and it was the guitar talking, saying, "Hello, baby." I said, "Oh, let me try this. I got the blues about my baby." And I did that while playing the guitar, and it sounded like the guitar talking. So I said, "I love this. Can I use it?" He says, "Yeah." So I said, "I'll give you some tips if I can think of anything." After using it, the first use of that guitar talk box, which at that point it was called the Magic Bag,
uh-huh,
until Custom Electronics bought it, and it hung around your shoulder with fringe.
Really?
And the tube. Yeah, that was the original one. And after using it for about a week, I went back to the inventor and I said, "I got some tips. I got some ideas for you." He said, "Go ahead, man. You know, I'll include you as the co-inventor." I said, "No. You've already invented it. I'll just give you some notes." I said, "You know, it's not loud enough. The sound coming up the tube is not loud enough. You have to work really hard for the enunciation with your lips." I said, "So why don't you take the driver that you have in there, which is a little speaker like that. I said, make it a bigger speaker, give it more power, and aim that up the tube and see what happens." So he did that. Oh, and one other thing. I said, instead of the roadies having to go back to the back of your amp and unplugging it from the speaker jack and then putting your speaker jack back in, why don't you put a little switch that'll switch it from the talk box into the speakers on the amp?
Yep.
He said, "Those are great ideas. I'll use it." So that's it. I used it on Metamorphosis. It came out. People were raving about it and saying, "Wow, man, I just heard this incredible sound. It's called the Magic Bag." Then it became the Guitar Talk Box. Funny story was, I ran into Jeff Beck in the recording studio.
Uh-huh.
Carmine Appice was there.
Yep.
And they were forming Beck, Bogart, and Appice.
Yep.
And Jeff says, "Mike, what's that thing you have there?" I said, "Oh, yeah, I'll show you." And I played some notes on it. And he says, "Oh, my gosh. Mike, could I just borrow that for a couple of weeks?" "Just a couple of weeks, that's all." I said, "Yeah, sure, but I got to get it back because I'm going out on tour in a couple of weeks." He said, "Okay." And Carmine looks at me and kind of smiles like, "You're never going to see that thing again." He said, "I could have given it back to you." And I just bypassed that. Well, 2 weeks later, no Magic Bag back.
Oh, man.
A month later, today, I still have not gotten that Magic Bag talk box back from Jeff Beck.
That sounds like Jeff Beck.
yeah. And so I said, "Wow, man, what's with this guy?" So I called him up one day, and I said, "Jeff, what are you doing with the thing? You know, you were supposed to get it back to me by now." He says, "Oh, Mike, I've made so many modifications to it, I couldn't possibly return it to you now.
Oh,
I've done so many things to it." I said, "Oh, okay. Okay, Jeff, fine. You keep it with your modifications and see you down the road." So I've joked about it plenty of times during my career that Jeff Beck, I won't use the word stole, but
he did.
Jeff Beck took my talk box and didn't return it.
You know, you should have taken that credit as co-inventor, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's true. I guess, you know, the people that matter, you know, Peter Frampton heard Jeff playing it, and then he started playing it, and people think that Peter Frampton was the first guy to
use it. Joe Walsh.
Walsh.
Yeah.
And then Joe Perry.
Right.
On Aerosmith.
Right.
And, it started coming into its own light, and then they changed the shape of it from a bag to a little pedal on the floor that you push the button with your foot, and that changes the speaker. So it's cool. But I thought you should know that story, because not too many people know that.
Well, should I make my headline for this interview that Mike Panera is the inventor of the talk box?
Actually, I was the co-inventor.
All right, co-inventor. But you did the modifications.
I didn't want to take... Huh?
You did the modifications, you know?
I did the modifications, that's right.
Yeah.
I came up with the ideas.
That's right.
To modify it, to give it a better sound, and that's why you can hear it so clear when Frampton goes, "Do you feel like I do?"
Yeah.
And all that. It's real clear. But if you go to Metamorphosis album and go to Butterfly Blue and listen
to
my freeform jam, you'll hear stuff like, "Don't bring me down."
Yeah, it's awesome.
As I detune it.
Yeah.
Detune it while I'm talking. Some unusual uses of the talk box.
Yeah, Frampton Comes Alive was successful because of that talk box.
he's such a talented guy.
Yeah.
He was so cute back then with his curly blonde hair. And, I gotta thank Frampton, because the day that I got married to my beautiful wife, Valerie,
who's
still here,
she,
1973 it was, and we got married that day, and I was supposed to play the Miami Baseball Stadium opening for Peter Frampton.
Right.
And I said to the promoter, I said, "Man, I don't know how this thing got mixed up, but they got our wedding scheduled for that time. I got to be in church getting married at the time that you have me set to play here." And he says, "Well, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?" I said, "Let me go talk to Peter." I said, "Peter, would you mind going on a little earlier so that I can go get married? Then I'll come back and I'll finish the set." He said, "Sure, Mike, sure. Take it easy.
Yeah.
Enjoy yourself and happy wedding and all that stuff." And so I went and got married.
Yeah.
Thanks to Peter allowing me to be late for my set.
That was nice. That was nice. You know, you're 100% right about the Brit guitars getting more PR. Some other guys that were monster guitarists, Frank Marino, and also I'm losing my train of thinking here. Tommy Bolin, which he did get an opportunity to play with Deep Purple, you know, at the time, but another great guitar player that probably didn't get enough PR as well, for his talent.
That's true.
So you are 100% right on that. But Mike Panera, when I was growing up, you were the man. I mean, that's all we heard about, the great guitar player, Mike Panera, you know, as I was growing up. So I remember a lot of PR about you growing up. And how big and what a great guitar player you were and still are today.
Thank you, Ray. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, man. Mike, here's your final question, all right?
Yes, sir.
And I get a lot of interesting answers from people. It's going to be tough for you because you know everybody in the business. But if you had a Field of Dreams wish, like in the movie, to perform, collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
God, there's so many people.
I know.
Does it matter if they're still alive? If they've passed away?
They could be passed away. It could be Mozart.
Then in that case, my dream list would be Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
George Harrison.
Okay.
Let's see. John Bonham.
Yep.
And thank goodness I got to play with John before he passed away.
Yeah.
And Jimmy. I didn't get to play with George Harrison. Jaco Pastorius.
Jaco,
bass,
yeah. Incredible.
Florida boy.
Yeah.
Definitely Greg Allman, we had great jams. And Duane Allman.
Yeah.
We had great jams together.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I have a list of... I could probably give you about, a couple of dozen names of people that I wish I could be playing with. or had recorded with or whatever, but, you know, most of those guys are gone.
Yeah.
And I feel terribly bad about that.
I know.
Glenn Frey was a good friend, and I thought he was very talented also. And Tom Petty.
Yeah.
Again.
Another Florida guy.
Deceased, but yeah. Very talented.
Yeah.
So that's a good question. I've never been asked that. And, you know, maybe I'll go license some of their songs and we'll put it on one album and
that'd be cool.
And, you know, do some
a tribute or something.
Integrated playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
And Paul McCartney.
Have you met any of the guys from the Beatles?
Yeah. Just briefly, though.
Right.
Very, very briefly.
Yeah. Now you actually played with did you jam with Hendrix?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What was that like?
Number of times. Oh, that was mind-boggling. That was, you know, to be sitting there playing at a nightclub in Hollywood called The Experience.
Yeah.
T-H-E-E. And in walks Jimi Hendrix, you know, with his entourage, a bunch of people. And he sits down very politely. He's looking up at us and he's nodding his head. And I just said, "You want to play?" I motioned to the guitar. And he said, "Sure." So he came up, and I just remembered, God, he's left-handed. I wonder if he's going to be able to do this with a right-handed guitar. No problem. He played extremely well, and I was wondering what we were going to play because, you know, most times, you know, Ray, being a guitar player, you go to jam with somebody, and you go, "Well, what do you want to play?" And they'll usually name a song.
Yeah.
They'll say, "Oh, let's do Rock Me Baby," or "Let's do Crossroads," or "Johnny Be Good."
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's based around a jam around a song that everybody knows.
Right.
But not so with Jimmy. Jimmy would come up, he'd look at me, and, you know, just kind of get serious for a minute, start tapping his foot, and then he'd start playing some rhythm thing. You know, mostly funky he would start off with.
Yeah.
Then I'd join in, and then before you know it, Blues Image would join in. And then one night, Jim Morrison came up in the middle of a jam with Jimmy.
Wow.
And, you know, picked up his blues harp and played like a John Lee Hooker kind of. So Jimmy was great at everything. Blues, fusion, psychedelic. And the biggest thing that I was able to take out of all that was that we became friends.
Yeah.
The band, Blues Image, and I were invited on numerous occasions to his house over in Beverly Hills, mm-hmm. California.
You didn't record any of those jam sessions, did you?
I don't have any with me. I don't have access to them, but I'm told that they exist.
Well, that'd be something, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think maybe one day somebody might say, "Hey, man, by the way, I got that jam of you and Hendrix from L.A.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that would be great to be able to resurrect those jams. Man, they're in my heart, bro, I tell you.
Yeah.
I'll never forget Jimmy as a person, as a friend, a gentleman, and a great innovative player.
There will never be another Jimi Hendrix. You know, he had his own style.
Sure.
Yeah, he really did. Mike, anything else you'd like to promote or chat about?
No, just, you know, for everybody to be safe during these periods.
Yep.
And check out Sawtooth Guitars, sawtooth.com, and see what I'm playing nowadays. And incredible stuff. I think you can access the show that I did yesterday, actually.
Right.
Mike Panera live from his porch right here with the, I'm holding my phone up on camera so that later on I'll send you the video of this. And, Sawtooth, most incredible music instruments on the planet. And then there's also, you know, some foundations here like Oasis and Hubbard Media that are helping the homeless, the poor and the needy to have food. These are people that sleep under piers and bridges and stuff, and he goes out there every day and feeds them. So look on the web, you know, on the internet for Hubbard Media or Oasis Network Inc. And donate a dime or donate whatever you can. Help them out to feed the people that need feeding. And that's about it. That's all I'd like to promote right now. And for the kids out there that think they need to get stoned to play right, I would just say, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Say, take it from me, from a veteran who's been there and done that. And I stopped doing everything in 1988.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I try to caution the kids. You don't need to do that to be a great player. Just practice and be around other great musicians and get that contact high.
Exactly.
That'll do it.
I got you. Mike, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today. I hope you come back to Florida soon after this is all over.
Yes, absolutely. That's one of our first places we're going to go to.
Awesome. We miss you here.
Oh, thank you, Ray.
Thank you, Mike. And we're looking forward to seeing you again on your live shows. And please stay in touch, man.
You got it.
All right. Take
thank
care.
You.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Purchase Timeless by The Blues Image featuring Mike Panera at Amazon.com. 70 classic rock heroes. Blues Image returned with his superb collection of recently recorded favorites and new song. Blues Image founder Mike Panera showcases both his past accomplishments with a fantastic new renditions of the blockbuster single Ride Captain Ride and Iron Butterfly's Enigata de Vida, as well as his present skills as a songwriter on such tunes as Love is the Answer, Pay My Dues, and more. Includes guest performances by blues rock legends Pat Travers and Journey's Jonathan Cain. For more information about Mike Panera, visit www.theclassicrockallstars.com, www.facebook.com/Mike Panera Official, and also www.solarisartist.com/exclusive/Mike Panera. Very special thanks to the dynamic duo, of course, of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news. And, of course, my new book is finally out, entitled The Rockstar Chronicles Series 1. It chronicles truths, confessions, and wisdom from the music legends that set us free, featuring over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends on the planet. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com or amazon.com. Everybody stay safe, stay home. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1. Thank you.